Okay, here we are. Back. I want to see if my other half is there. You there?
I am here.
You sound like you're right in my ear. That's good.
Technology, right?
Yeah. Okay. There are a couple of things we're going to do here to get warmed up, and then we're going to roll out. They've got really some interesting things tonight. As I think some of you heard last hour, Elon Musk is claiming two very unsavory people with a gun tried to kill him recently, and how he can't go anywhere, and poor me, I can't go to restaurants, I can't go to a movie without people wanting selfies of me, and I just don't know what to do about it. What? How naive? He's pretending to be an idiot. Maybe he's not pretending. I don't know. All I do know is he didn't make all that money on his own. All right. Now, vitamin D, 3, the savior of hundreds of millions of people around the world. They jumped on vitamin D3. They really believed that vitamin D3 was going to rescue them and prevent them from being a statistic in the COVID genetic massacre of humanity. Well, D3 is not what you think it is. We're going to explain to you simply about the two kinds of D3, what they test for, and the simple fact that vitamin D3 can kill you. Now, before we jump into this, one of the most treasured friends I've ever had in this lifetime, he's gone now, was Jim Morris. And Jim and I had so many conversations off air that were absolutely priceless. I would give anything to have them all. But I got a call from Jim one day, and he was in ICU. And I said, what the hell are you doing in ICU? Well, I wanted you to know I'm in ICU. What are you doing there? They don't know yet. They're trying to figure this out. And I'm not in good shape, and I'm worried, and whatever. So I think it was the next day that I got another call, and he said, well, they figured it out. What? I took too much vitamin D3. I said, what? How much did you take? And he said, well, I figured if a little bit was good for you, you know, a lot more would be better. And he was taking 25,000 units a day at the time. And in his case, it very nearly killed him. So there's a little cautionary tale. Please be careful with the D3. Now, my invaluable partner is going to tell you about the two kinds of D3 and what they test for most of the time. This is very interesting. You don't know this, most of you.
Yeah, well, we've covered this topic in the past.
Yes.
And there is a big push to get everybody to take vitamin D as if it's going to be the thing that makes the difference as to whether or not they come down with COVID or whatever, cancer. I guess now they're saying, oh, you've got to get your vitamin D up so you won't get cancer. You know, that kind of I would call it propaganda, because vitamin D is a hormone, and hormones should be respected. And there's a saying that if your body doesn't make it, don't take it. But not necessarily in this case. But anyway, I'm very suspicious of the big push for vitamin D. At the very least, high levels or high amounts of supplemental vitamin D can dysregulate your iron metabolism. And it can also be immune suppressive, and that's where a lot of people find they feel better with vitamin D, because it's turning down inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go to measure people's vitamin D nowadays, they're measuring most often the inactive form. And when you're taking high amounts of D3 as a supplement, that's the inactive form. It still has to be activated
by
the kidneys.
Please hold on. When you take D3 off the shelf, that's the inactive form of vitamin D. Understand? Don't forget
that. Yeah, it still has to be converted. Now, people with kidney issues or other issues may not convert it. So it can hang around in an inactive form. And the danger with that is that it will sit on the vitamin D receptor and block it from the active form when the body needs the active form. So at the very least, you are dysregulating the vitamin D receptor by taking supplemental vitamin D.
Right.
And before you assume that you're deficient, because what they're measuring is the inactive form, not the active form, the one that really counts, you really should be tested, you know, for both and see what they're doing. Because quite often, the inactive form will be low on a blood test when there's inflammation going on, because it's known to be a negative, acute negative phase reactant. In other words, the body drives it down when there's infection and inflammation. So it can be very deceptive, and people will take copious amounts and they can't seem to get that level back up. Well, it's because the body's fighting it. It does not want a high level of inactive vitamin D. And the other thing that may be influencing that number is your magnesium status. You need magnesium to metabolize that vitamin D.
And America is magnesium poor. It's magnesium deficient. Believe it.
Yep.
90% of you listening are magnesium deficient.
So just to give some counter narrative to this rather aggressive vitamin D promotion, let me just read you the symptoms of hypercalcemia, which can result if you take too much vitamin D, basically, when you don't need it, because it's really the parathyroid gland that's controlling your calcium levels, and if you're somehow overriding it or interfering with its function, you can end up with this hypercalcemia. And the symptoms are chest pain, irregular heartbeat, fatigue, shortness of breath, brain fog.
Oh, my.
And vitamin D toxicosis, meaning, you know, you've overdosed on vitamin D, can result in weakness, a metallic taste in the mouth, weight loss, bone pain, constipation, nausea and vomiting, abdominal pain, dehydration, excess urination, mental confusion, muscle weakness. Now, we have on Facebook, there's a group of approximately 20,000 people who have experienced this. And to try to get this vitamin D out of their... Vitamin D toxicosis. Vitamin D toxicosis. And okay. And they were feeling sick, and they didn't know why. And somebody clued them into, well, are you taking vitamin D? It might be this. The other thing is, if you have intracellular infections, and there's a few in particular, mold is one, mycoplasma is another, those organisms can overconvert vitamin D to its active form, and which can result in the same syndrome of too much calcium in the blood. So it's not something that should be done, you know, indiscriminately,
casually.
The supplementation. Yeah, you really should get a picture as to whether or not you genuinely need it. Because if you don't, you can end up with some real problems. And you know, you read some of these posts of people who have overdone it with their vitamin D, and now it's to the point where they have to scrutinize the foods they're eating, because vitamin D is so widely supplemented in foods.
Yes.
It's very hard to
that's,
get
that's part
a commercial
of your daily
product.
Intake. You got to be careful.
Yeah. It's very difficult to find a commercial food that doesn't have added
interesting,
vitamin D.
Interesting. 89-year-old man in the UK died. They're calling it hypercalcemia. That's again a buildup of calcium in the body caused by excess levels of vitamin D. All right, so there's a fatality for you. So just keep in mind, and they're recommending you take 600 units a day. And they say if you need a little more, you can get up to 4,000 units a day in specific cases where you're really in trouble, and who's going to even determine that anyway. But Jim was taking 25,000.
There are people taking very high amounts.
Yeah, well, it didn't work for him. And anyway, he stopped and he was fine in a couple of days and they let him out.
But again, I'll say if you're harboring one of these intracellular pathogens that overconverts the vitamin D, I mean, it's just, you know, you could run into problems very quickly and basically calcify all your soft tissues.
Right. Right. Wow. Okay, very good. There's your vitamin D update. And we have done this at least once, maybe twice before, but yeah.
I'll just let people know if they're on Facebook. I know Facebook is really, well, whatever. It's not what it used to be. The name of the group is Secosteroid Hormone D. Secosteroid.
Spell
Seco. S-E-C-O. Secosteroid. Mm-hmm. S-T-E-R-O-I-D. All one word. Next word, hormone, and then the letter D, as in David. Secosteroid hormone D, and it's run by, you know, some people that really know their stuff. You can really get some education in this group.
Very good. Okay, next up tonight, what do you want to do, Harry Fisher?
Let's do Harry Fisher.
All right.
Harry Fisher is a paramedic. Who I came to the fore, I don't know, a couple months ago, and just couldn't stay quiet about what he was seeing.
No, he was there. I think we played another clip of his, didn't we? We might have. I remember this guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been very outspoken and passionate about exposing this genocide, and now X has banned him.
Okay. How can that be, ladies and gentlemen, when Elon Musk is leading the charge to protect the First Amendment? How can that be? Well, Elon Musk is not what you think he is. The first hire he made after acquiring, with masses of Jewish money, Jewish banking money, when he acquired X, Twitter, who did he hire? Who was his first CEO that he hired? A woman who was a former, I think she was a board chair of an organizational group within the World Economic Forum. She was way up there. Linda Yaccarino, Jewish. He brought her right in and put her in charge of X. Does that tell you anything at all? Anything? I hope so. So, all right, this guy got canned. Censorship is everywhere. And some of these sites that are pretending to be First Amendment, I think, are just collecting names for now. I think they really are.
Yeah.
Whether they're doing it intentionally or not, I think it's happening. All right, here's Harry Fisher. Okay, here we go. Let's see what Harry Fisher has to say. I haven't heard this, so I always look forward to hearing these with you the first time.
So I'm hearing that I'm banned from X because of a live talk that I did months ago where I got passionate and I ended up talking about wanting to form a militia. I didn't say I was going to form it. I just said I would like to form a large enough militia that scared any tyrant, anyone that wanted to commit mass murder, knowingly commit mass murder against our people. I'd like to have enough Americans to put the type of fear in the heart of anyone that would harm our people. Because I've been experiencing mass murder play out on our people. I go into these live groups and I listen to doctors and nurses and vaccine injured people that have lost their children. And we all know at this point, everyone that's been affected, negatively affected by these shots, we are well aware that there's been a cover-up occurring. And that the powers that be, whoever they might be, are aiming at us. The only reason you would cover up all of the death and dying and still push it on children is if you're actively trying to harm people. Well, that's genocide. In a rigged system, that's actively trying to kill you, what do you do? Can you vote away tyrants? Well, I would like to at least have enough people band together and just at least start screaming in the same direction. Because right now, we're a bunch of splintered groups that are just being removed one by one. And it's very sad to witness. God bless.
Well, he's 100% right. And under the Constitution, militias are allowed. And mm-hmm. he even said, he qualified it, he said, even if we're just a group, a big group, shouting in the same direction at the same people, that's a militia, and that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Look, are we voting these evil ones out? Nope. He's right about that, too.
Yeah.
We're not voting anybody out. All we're doing is voting them in. Why? Because 90% of them are crooked to begin with, and the 10% that get in there are usually turned with money or Epstein blackmail type things in no time at all. It's everything's controlled. If the rank and file American people, and many of you listening in other countries are facing a situation, you have no constitution, you have no Bill of Rights. You're not nearly as fortunate and blessed as we are. But we are in real trouble. If the average person knew here how thoroughly they are controlled from the cradle to the grave, they would be stupefied. They wouldn't believe it. Now, I'm speaking just for myself, not for any of you, not anyone else, but that's my conclusion after being in this business for a long time. I've seen a lot of things, and the control is so damned complete and insidiously perpetrated on humankind as to leave most people completely incredulous. They wouldn't understand if they knew. So they're not going to know. They're going to be given their little diversions, their toys, their phones, their sports, their beers, and that's kind of the norm. And I'm not saying that there are not other ways to live life. There are. But that's what most people, the majority of people, fall into. And they actually don't fall into it. They're led into it. Anyway,
that's
your
right.
turn. Yeah.
No, and Alan Watt would agree with you.
Oh, Alan.
The late, great Alan Watt.
I had Alan on. He was really something.
He saw the
big picture, too. He knew.
Yep.
And I don't run across many people like that. It's just too hard. It's too big of a leap for them. They just can't go there. And not knocking anybody.
I mentioned to you earlier, there was somebody in one of the vax injured groups today that was had posted some article about, I don't know, it was some puff piece about how the vaccine only produces spike protein for a limited amount of time and then it's gone. And you know, everybody in that group pretty much laughed at it. You know, they know better. They've been tested. They continually show spike in their circulation. Mm-hmm. And so there were some comments, and I added a comment of my own that wasn't very flattering. And the person actually came back and somewhat defended the military that had administered her vaccines. And then, you know, kind of blaming it on bureaucratic error and miscommunication.
This is very interesting what Erica's saying here. Here's a victim by the military, forced to take the shot, will never be the same, and is essentially almost apologizing for the military. That's called
making excuses.
That's called the
Stockholm syndrome.
That's it.
Yeah.
You begin to identify in a positive way with your captors, those who have done you damage, and you begin to defend them. And that there's so many angles to this horrible mind operation that's been perpetrated on the planet. And some of you in other countries, again, you don't know what the great tragedy of America is, that we have the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. we have the greatest document that humankind has ever created and lived by, and we are allowing it to be degraded, and it's going to be trashed. It's close now. And some of you out there probably know this, and you must be scratching your head. What the hell is wrong with those people? Well, what's wrong with these people over here is they're not the same as they were 30, 40 years ago. You got Gen Z now, 25% of which is openly identifying with LGBTQ. That's admitted. And you got millennials. The under 45s here are a ghost of what they used to be. They don't know. They don't know what they've lost. And now they're going to lose it all. And I don't see them getting up. I don't see them getting angry. I don't see them taking this thing in hand. I just don't. I wish I could say otherwise. And if I change my mind, you'll be the first to know. Anyway. Sickening. All of it. We have so much. And you want to be religious? God gave us the tools with which to formulate and to conceive these documents. And we did. And our founding fathers in this country, no other country has a First Amendment in the world. Think about that. So you see how easy it is for a certain group to have taken abject control over most of this planet? And maybe that's conservative. Maybe it's worse than that. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But they are leading us again into the sewer of absolute failure. And you study history. It's all there. It's all there.
Yeah. Mind control.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. See, I told you, she's got the brains of this outfit. But I couldn't make it without her.
No.
Here we go. Remdesivir. We knew a man, a very nice man, who got sick. His wife got sick. They both went into the hospital in Florida. She got out the next day, but he didn't get out. He had, you know, the usual profile symptoms. He might have had the flu. Who knows what he really had? And I kept telling him, I'd say, his name was John. I'd talk to him. He'd be in there. And I'd say, John, you've got to get out. You've got to get out of there. Go home. If your wife's going home, go home. Tough it out. Get out against, what is it, against medical advice or whatever the heck they call it.
Right.
And he stayed. And we had at one point, he was such a conscientious fellow, really nice man, and prepared. He prepared for everything. He was well prepared. He was big in agriculture. He had farms and so forth. And we did. He asked if Eric and I would talk to some friends of his and tell them the truth about what was going on. And you know, we agreed, and we spent better part of an hour talking to his friends, family. He desperately did not want.
Well, it was his family. Several members of the family were going to be forced to take a shot to keep their jobs.
And that's what we were trying to do.
You know, of the age where they had a lot invested in their career, in the company, and were approaching retirement within a couple of years. And if they forfeited their job, they would forfeit their retirement. So they were stuck between a rock and a hard place.
We answered all their questions. We presented everything pragmatically, like we try to do here always. And he never said, but it was obvious that all of our efforts really didn't add up to much. They apparently went ahead with their plans. Now, he's in the hospital. I told him to get out, John, get out. Please. And then I said, they're going to give you remdesivir. Oh, no, they won't. I've told them. No, they won't. And he didn't, over the next few days, get better. He kept getting worse. I said, John, ask the nurse to give you your chart. I want you to look at your chart. See what you see. look for remdesivir. And he said, Dad's not there. He got the chart, and I talked to him again, and he said, well, it was there. They gave it to me. And the doctor came in, and I asked the doctor, why did you give me remdesivir when I specifically told you not to? He laughs, the doctor. He says, ha, don't worry. I just gave you enough to save your life. He was dead. He was dead within a week. He went on to a vent, and they killed him with remdesivir. So that's just one personal story, and you listening, many of you out there have lost people to remdesivir and the death protocol that accompanied the beginning of this whole genocide. Remdesivir wrecked my best friend's life. Tell us about this, and we'll roll this.
Well, this is, I would say, a middle-aged young man that he and his friend, the friend ended up coming down with COVID sometime back in 2021 and was hospitalized for it and was given the drug and didn't do well with it. And despite begging and pleading to try the FLCCC protocol, the doctors wouldn't, refused, patently refused to do it and kept him on the remdesivir, and he kept deteriorating and ended up on a vent. And, well, you can hear the story. Right. He didn't die, but maybe he wished he did, because the outcome wasn't good.
Okay, here we go.
My name is Jim Jarvis.
This is about your bestie best friend, right?
Yes, my best friend, Ryan.
Ryan, okay. Yeah. What happened to Ryan?
About 2 years ago, around, let's see, it was November, so I think it was 21, he had gotten sick with COVID.
Had he had the vaccine?
No.
No,
none of us were vaccinated. And, you know, us being guys, we don't take any type of sickness very seriously, so we just laughed about it. I've known him since we were three, and we've been through, like, everything together, but he'd gotten bigger. You know, he's about my height, but he's a big wide guy, you know, big loud laugh and everything like that. And so we kind of laughed about how he's going to have to miss work and watch some Netflix and stuff like that. And he did get pretty sick. And so he checked himself into the hospital. It was a Friday because he just had gotten so dehydrated from it. And they sent him home. They put him on IV. They sent him home. And then Saturday, Sunday, he was fine. And then Monday, he'd gone back into the hospital.
Was he struggling to breathe or something?
It was just a headache. Just a headache, dehydrated.
Okay.
And that was the last time I saw him. Because what had happened following was they immediately put him on remdesivir. And as soon as they put him on that, everything started to go downhill.
Were you able to text him or communicate via phone?
Yes.
What was he saying?
He was talking like after about 2 days that he was going to die. He was isolated. He said that he wasn't treated very nicely because of... was unvaccinated, and he couldn't have any New York State rules at the time. You couldn't visit him.
I'm sorry, I gotta stop this. The abuse of the unvaxxed in hospitals is something that we have covered a number of times. You've heard it, I'm sure. There is no excuse under any circumstance to abuse or harm people who have or have not taken these shots, and yet they were doing that to this person. How despicable! Our healthcare industry is horrible.
Yeah.
He isolated that had COVID, so he had nobody there except a nurse checking on him once in a while, telling him that his oxygen was getting lower and lower while he's on remdesivir, and they might have to put him on a ventilator. So he was on remdesivir for about 4 days. Things kept getting worse and worse and worse. At the time, I think that was like right around when Peter McCullough had come out on the Joe Rogan podcast. And we were reaching out to the doctors to try to do a different protocol because he wasn't getting any better. And we said, could you at least take a look at the Math Plus protocol, which was the protocol for like ivermectin and vitamin D and everything. Mm-hmm. And they pretty much like laughed at us about it and like said, oh, yeah, we'll look into it, and kept blowing us off. we couldn't get to him, and I wasn't like his healthcare proxy, so there wasn't much more that I could do about it. So he spent 4 days on remdesivir. His oxygen got into about like the 80s, and they immediately said, oh, now we have to put you on a ventilator. They put him on a ventilator, and he immediately went into cardiac arrest. He died on the table for 10 minutes, and they tried to bring him back. They brought us to the hospital, and we all thought that was it. It was just a complete shock. Like, all of a sudden, my best friend's going to die. And so we're there at the hospital, and this is the only time they let you in, is when somebody's going to die. I couldn't see him. I went to go visit him he was laying on a table in the ICU, and he was blue. And I'm just like, this is unbelievable. And it was like a total shock. You know, they wouldn't listen to our treatments. Here he is. And long story short, we waited there for hours. They ended up kicking us out of the hospital. We were there for 6 hours. And he ended up living, which was amazing. And he's a tough guy. So
how did he come back from that?
His oxygen was down to like 30 when he went into like cardiac arrest.
Wow.
And we just waited, and they said, he's gone. Like, you guys, you're just going to have to wait here. We waited there for 6 hours, and somehow it climbed up to, like, the mid-80s. And so we made a comeback, and I don't know, act of God, you know? And so we waited for a month. He was on there. And then the next side effect from remdesivir happened. He went to kidney failure. But he fought through that, too, which was unbelievable. He made it through that. Unfortunately, he woke up around Christmas time, and he was a total vegetable. And so his eyes pointed out left and right, like a 90-degree angle this way, 90-degree angle this way. And he just would shake his head like this. He couldn't respond, so I would go to visit him at the hospital. I would, like, grab his hand and hold his hand and talk to him whenever they would let you in, because he was out of the ICU at that time. And he got to a point where he was there for a couple weeks, and he started like being able to like whisper, talk, and everything like that. So he was like coming out of like this vegetative state. So the hospital actually recommended him to a good therapy hospital. And so they sent him down to Pennsylvania, which is only like an hour and a half from here. And he was starting to get better and wake up out of like this state. And then his insurance dropped him.
Why?
Because he couldn't work anymore. And so he couldn't keep his insurance, and they didn't want to pay for this out-of-network hospital, even though he was getting better. And so they sent him to a comparable facility that could have helped him, which was a New York State skilled nursing facility, which pretty much for the last year, he's sat in a bed sedated with no therapy, nothing.
Is that where he is now?
And that's where he is now, yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah. So no chance of therapy. No chance for any other protocols. And he was shunned at the hospital pretty much because he never received the vaccine.
So, and he'd been paying insurance for all that time.
Yeah.
And then when he got sick and he can't work because he's so sick, they stop it. What's the point of having insurance?
I know. And they wouldn't pay for the proper therapy hospital because it's out of network. And they find, you know, they put in quotes what's comparable, but they don't do the same thing. And that's really like the first year if you have a brain injury, because again, he died on a table for 10 minutes. Like, that first year is so key, so crucial. You'd hope he'd have an insurance that would help give you like the proper rehabilitation.
So can he communicate with you in any way, shape, or form?
Every time I go visit him, he's so sedated, I don't know. You know, I talk to people that visit him, so we have different friends and family that go visit him, and some have had like quality conversations with him, and other people have been like, he's like hallucinating, I don't know what he's talking about. And I've had more of those visits than anything.
And how
more visits where he's just completely sleeping the entire time.
How old is he now?
He's 43.
That's tragic.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So
it's a really important story. I can't believe that he pulled through after cardiac arrest and then after kidney failure.
Yeah. He's a tough guy.
He's a tough guy.
You know, he needed a little more. Just a little chance, you know. So, but it's just, the part that kills me is that we've had all these readily available treatments that could have helped people.
Right.
You know, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, like all these things that, you know, but it was all about the vaccine and all about EUA.
We hear from so many people telling the same story, but with an ending that's never good.
Yeah.
And they're all unvaccinated, and they all seem to be seems to me like they're being punished for being unvaccinated. The abuse they get is not okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you've seen all the media clips, you know, from the president and all the officials on the news that said, you know, it's the pandemic of the unvaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, you're not responsible. And it was all BS the whole time.
It's terrible.
But it creates an attitude. You know, and it creates a mindset for people that watch it that they start believing that they hear it enough. And then they treat people like that. And probably a lot of people were hurt just because of that mindset. So.
This is tragic. And it's your best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you for being his best friend and keep going on in there.
I'm glad I could have you. I'm glad you guys let me tell a story.
Yeah, that's really important. And you've got to write his name on the bus.
I did.
What number is it?
433. So he's on there.
433. Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Genocide takes many different shapes, configurations, colors. It's mass murder. That's what's going on here. But the human aspect of it is maybe the most unforgivable part when you think about it. Abusing someone who has been obviously put in this position through no act of their own, and then to put him on this dead. Everybody in the business knows remdesivir is a fatal drug. It's not. It doesn't do anything. Nothing.
Yeah.
So okay, this is another. Sadly, I'm sure. How many people do they kill with remdesivir? Millions here in the U.S. We don't know. Nobody will tell us. We'll never know. I'd say it's millions. I also think that in the last 4 years, if you didn't see over a four-year period, 1 out of 10 people, if 1 out of 10 people disappeared over a four-year period, I'm willing to bet that nobody would notice. And therefore, we might have 30 to 35 million dead here in the U.S. already. And all the other methods of writing cause of death on the death certificate, which have nothing to do with reality, we're just being lied to and lied to nonstop. Nothing new. Okay, that was another sad one. Well, we lost our friend John. They killed him as sure as we're talking right now.
Yeah, it was interesting because I can think of a few, man and wife, husband, wife, who were hospitalized concurrently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the wife makes it out, but the husband didn't. And then I did hear one of the interviews, a nurse in one of the hospitals had said there was a different protocol for men.
What the hell is that? Yeah, we've heard it too. We've heard it. But what? Where does that come from? What is the biological justification for that?
Well, if you get rid of males, then...
Well, you ask Arnie Burkhart, the late Arnie Burkhart. Yeah, males were targeted. Females were targeted. Human reproduction was one of the primary goals, and it was achieved with perfection.
I would think that, you know, males are the ones that are going to actually physically fight in most cases. They're going to put up the most resistance. Mm-hmm. At least physically. And, you know, if you want to take out a population, well, target the males.
You got it. And then bring 10 million others in of fighting age to take their place, and don't give any of them any shots.
Right.
They're not getting shots, friends. They're not getting vaxxed. They're not getting the genocide. They're going to be healthy. They're supposed to be here to succeed us. That's the plan, at least to a significant degree. Okay, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. That's another issue we want to talk about. Anything we've missed, or are we up to speed here? I think we're okay.
No, we're good.
All right. This is a little clip from Mike O'Mara, who is one of the most, I guess, renowned vax-injured who is dying and who happens to be a superior writer, and is remarkably able to put into words the indescribable. And a lot of people kind of get tired of him, I guess. He's had some people giving him guff back. But he is dying, and he is describing it remarkably well. And I salute that. Go ahead with the ALS thing. Start that up.
All right. Well, so he is just, he never ceases to fight for the vax injured and drawing attention to this, these atrocities. So the other day he posts, he was trolling Reddit, and he says, yet another young person diagnosed ALS with atypical starting symptoms for the disease post-vax. More and more and more victims. This young man described is 37 years old, and he was told he had familial ALS. But they did the genetic testing, and neither he nor his family members have the genes for it.
Right.
And here we have the post.
Yeah.
Okay. This person says, I posted this in the ALS subreddit, but it was taken down. My brother, just 37 years old, was recently diagnosed with familial ALS. We have one aunt that passed from ALS 15 years ago, but that was thought to be sporadic, and ALS wasn't even on our radar. As many with this horrible disease try to do, we are racking our brains to potentially understand what triggered his ALS. We also understand that the triggering may have been multifactorial. Also of note, his initial DNA panel from Invitae came back negative. I think 34 genes were tested. Here's a timeline of his COVID vaccine, booster, and subsequent symptoms. Pfizer vaccine in early 2021, with booster in late 2021. COVID at the end of 2021.
Okay, hold on, please. I want to get that in your mind as we go through this. He took the first shot in early 2021, and then he got the booster late that same year. And at the end of that same year, he got COVID. All right, please go ahead.
Safe and effective.
Yeah.
Beginning of 2022, he had a rash all over his body. His hands puffed up like a balloon, and behind his ear was a swollen node ball, probably lymph node. Throughout 2022, he experienced continual fatigue and body aches, began taking magnesium supplement to potentially address these symptoms. In mid-2023, he had foot drop, cramps, achy foot, and calf. Later, in mid-2023, he got so sick that movement was even difficult. Later, in mid-2023, he had a rash again on his head, hands, and arms. Late 2023, the foot drop got worse, lots of twitching and tremors, major weakness in left leg, and hyperreflexia, Babinski sign. End of 2023, EMG shows upper/lower abnormalities suggestive of motor neuron disease, diagnosis of familial ALS. In reading several Reddit posts here, as well as other ALS online forums, some point to no evidence the vaccine or COVID could trigger ALS. Another argument is that we haven't seen an influx of ALS diagnoses since the vaccine and COVID. However, isn't it possible the vaccine and or COVID could have triggered or played a part in triggering ALS in some people who carry a rare ALS gene? As my brother's gene didn't appear on the Invitae panel, he doesn't carry a more common gene, so the assumption is that he has a rarer or even undiscovered ALS mutated gene. I'm wondering if others have also experienced a similar story.
All right, someone adds in their comment, my ex-acting coach is suffering now from ALS. It took the doctors a year to properly diagnose him after he began to show symptoms. It does not run in his family. He lived a very responsible and healthy life. He developed it after the vax, within a year. This is alarming. Now he has to do a GoFundMe as well. I am not soliciting donations. I'm just providing documentation. And this is the GoFundMe posting. An actor's guardian angel calling all ALS angels organized by such and such. And then there's a comment from, this is Mike O'Mara, right?
Yeah.
He says, Lisa Ann, I'll stop there, evil, and all of us will die terribly. It is the worst disease on the planet, bar none, and the poison gave it to us. That's Mike. Go ahead.
Okay, she continues. A woman I was acquainted with had, this is somebody different. A woman I was acquainted with had familial bulbar ALS in her family. Her mother died from it at 64. However, once my acquaintance was vaxxed, she developed a rapid onset of bulbar ALS and passed in November 2023. She was young, probably mid-40s. Now she is gone. And for reference, here is her GoFundMe page. And Mike replies, this young man didn't even have the genes, and yet they say familial ALS, saying that is why his decline has been so rapid. They're running out of excuses to not even mention or question the possibility of the poison.
Next comment. My mother-in-law passed from this, and she suspected the same cause. I'm so sorry people are suffering far longer than she had to bear. When she gave up, she decided to take boosters to speed up the process. Yes, you heard that right. This lady was so miserable, she decided to take, we'll just say Pfizer, to take more boosters to speed up the process of her exit. Prior to that, she refused to take any. She was never recognized as vax injured, but mentioned her thoughts to her MND consultant. What is that?
Motor neuron disease.
I never would have got it. It fills me with such sadness and anger the way more people are suffering, and imagine how many like her are under the radar and not vocal. Yeah, we got a whole hidden populace of people who are not only subclinical symptomatically, but they just, no one wants to hear about it, or they don't even want to talk about it. So this is all, again, sub rosa. Okay, comment to that. My dad just passed from a brain tumor and lung cancer. Nobody can tell me it wasn't from the vax. Someone adds in, I'm so sorry to hear of your loss. And then the person adding to that says, I almost lost half of my household. Half of my household after my mom secretly got her and her younger brothers the shot. My unjabbed sister and oldest uncle, jabbed uncle, died days apart.
Unjabbed.
Our oldest unjabbed uncle died days apart. Mom and sister was secretly given remdesivir. Damn it, see? And intubated against their will. And their death was marked as COVID. My uncle died in his bedroom on the floor from them shedding on him. Death certificate says COVID. Somebody adds, it is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. This remdesivir. Look, if you go in the hospital and think you're going to be safe by telling them you don't want remdesivir, you are wrong. You are so wrong, it may cost you your life. You need to have a paper drawn up now in advance. You need to make somebody in there sign it when you're being admitted. No remdesivir under any circumstances. And you need to have an advocate watching. They do this a lot. They give it to people without their permission. And they also give them what? They give them the vax without their permission.
Yeah.
You get in the hospital, you are in real deep trouble. Okay, someone adds to that. Let me just underscore that. It is not enough to tell the hospital personnel no remdesivir. It is not enough. When Harry Cooper went into the hospital with whatever he had, he was very sick. I got on the phone, some of you know this, and I said, you know, I want to talk to Harry and talk to him briefly, and he said, I'm not well. And I said, let me talk to the nurse. And he gave the phone to the nurse, and I ripped that woman. Sorry, I don't know her. I said, under no circumstances are you to give him remdesivir. Do you hear me? And he said he could hear me halfway across the room. And but they were going to do it. They would have given it to him, and he'd be dead. They do this all the time. God damn them all. Just they're all accessories to murder. All right, someone adds, thank you, same to you. I'm just beside myself. How all this took place, it's so evil. And a response to that, same here, lost my best friend to turbo cancer. People will argue that with me. Well, that's not true. Well, yes, it is true. And a comment to that, this is tragic. My sister also got ALS from the vax. She decided not to let it get worse, so she left before it could. Those demons know exactly what they've done. Go ahead. Let's see if we can finish
last one. Someone says, as a nurse, I have cared for more ALS patients in the past 3 years than in my entire 25-year career. It's glaringly obvious to anyone paying the slightest bit of attention.
So there's another target, okay, of these diabolically, incredibly sophisticated and varied death shots. Now, ALS, think prions again, right? What do we tell? I mean, how much prions and ALS?
Well, yeah. Well, ALS is a protein misfolding disease.
Yes.
So it's conceivable that if the prion or the spike protein being a prion seed finds its way into the relevant neurology, that, you know, it can induce this.
Yeah.
It did have. I mean, the Bart Klassen paper, before the vax were rolled out, he identified two, if not three, binding sites that would, you know, if they were turned on, could induce ALS.
Exactly. Yeah. This is, understand, we've spent several programs on the issue of spike creating prion problems, and then the prions themselves will create more prions. It doesn't have to always incur
the participation.
Yeah,
well, it's a cascade, and you know, once the process starts, it just continues.
Exactly.
And these proteins become such that the body has no means of breaking them down. They're insoluble.